Thanks for ringing the bell. I've got a suggestion, and you don't have to do it. But I am interested to know, if you were to describe your practice to a beginner or to somebody who's never done it before, what would you say? It doesn't have to be to do with the sitting, it can be to do with what you do when you sit. If someone says, you said you do Dharma practice, what is that? How would you describe it to somebody in simple terms so that they could understand it? I'm interested what you would say.
Being in the present moment.
Being in the present moment. But you're always in the present moment. What do you mean? You're not. Where do you go then, Howard? All over the place. Okay. What? So being in the present moment rather than being all over the place.
To me it's a bit weird, it's a bit like scuba diving, as in as the normal environment often just becomes, transforms itself in front of me, and then I have the feeling that I need to take over this kind of switch that I need to wear in order to get to feel all this.
So it's putting on a kind of suit, and it's a bit like scuba diving, so that you can feel all this. No?
Yeah.
Something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay. That sounds interesting. Yeah, scuba diving. Okay.
I would say for me it's mostly about practicing being compassionate towards all living beings.
Okay.
And nature.
Practicing being compassionate to all living beings and nature.
Well, including plants.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, everything, the whole planet, including insects, slugs, everything.
I think I'd do a similar practice to you, but I wonder if we are doing the same thing. I'm wondering what it is to be compassionate to all beings. If I was somebody saying, "Oh, well, what is it to be compassionate to all beings, and what does that actually mean? How do you do that?"
Meaning we can try to connect to them, like it's not even trying, because I suppose it comes easily to me with animals and it's not so easy with people.
Okay.
So I'm just trying, like just connecting and not harming.
Connecting and not harming,
yeah.
Okay. So that's some of the ingredients of compassion there, connecting and not harming. And the word all is a big word, isn't it? All beings. But easier for animals than some people.
Yeah. I'm trying. I'm also trying, let's say, when with people sometimes harder, because if somebody does something family or it's very hard to connect to that person. You really have to try hard. You have to be more aware, or at least me, I have to be more using my head more, because emotionally I would find it hard. So I would have to use my head and say, well, the person who does this or that's probably not very happy, or it's harder to feel like, we're all connected with somebody who does something you find hurtful. So that's why I mean it's easier later.
So you're using the thinking there to help you.
Yeah.
So you're thinking, oh, they might not know. Well, I'm not sure what you would think, but if there's some reflection cognitively, it was helping you to be compassionate. Am I right? Yeah. You did say the word aware very quickly. I had to be more aware, and then you said, but go up to thinking. Yeah. I think you did. That's really interesting. I feel like I get a sense of your practice. You know, just hearing you describe it. What are you getting up to? It's nice to hear.
I think if I was going to discuss it with a beginner, or try and explain it to them, I would like learning how to really train the thoughts, train the brain,
okay,
to calm it down as possible. But probably at the beginning, that would be in very short seconds that we'd be doing it.
Mm.
And then
mm-hmm. Okay.
But it's quite difficult to explain.
It is, yeah. So what was the last bit you said?
You only have very short periods of change.
Yeah.
In your brain when you first start.
All right.
And then it's all back to normal.
Yeah. So for you, you would say training the brain, growing calm. That's not what you said, but I'm kind of paraphrasing. Growing for calm, and you might use technique like the breath. So that's one way. But then you also said how difficult it is to explain to beginners, and I agree with you. I think it's quite a challenge to describe a practice and. Yeah.
I think I would say it's sitting still, mm-hmm. That's still my body,
mm-hmm.
And try and become aware of my thoughts and feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And even if it's been used, it isn't mine, but I find it helpful. The idea of sitting by the riverbank and watching the things go by. Things being the thoughts, the images, the emotions, and to, a bit like you said, then train yourself not to get so caught up in them, and be able to see them, have some distance. So that would be the base, I think, and that gives you then some choice. To try also and see where they're coming from.
Mm.
You can always catch the beginning of it, see where that thought has come from.
Mm.
And so it hopefully that you, yeah, you make a choice about whether you're going to behave or act in a certain way.
Mm. Okay. Can I just check that I've understood?
Yeah.
Started stilling the body, something about being still.
Yeah.
And then being aware of the, I think you said thoughts and feelings.
Yes. Yeah.
And then the beautiful metaphor of the river.
Yes.
And for me it was just like, it's check the flow of
mm-hmm.
experience.
Mm-hmm.
And also speaking about the power of choice. You've got some power of choice because of the distance there.
Yes.
Between, is the distance between you and the river or between what and what?
Well, for me, what's in the river are the thoughts and the emotions.
Okay.
So that it creates a slight distance between myself, my bigger self, and those that keep passing through.
Mm.
So that I can see them, or I can see them, or feel them as well.
Mm.
Not get caught up in the eye of them, like the eye of the storm, not get sucked up into them.
Okay.
Be able to perhaps even see them coming from, or see them arising.
Mm.
I think yes. But that's a, but yes, and it does give if then you have some choice as to how you will act.
I really liked hearing about your practice. It sounds really good. I liked it. I like hearing about it. Yeah, it sounds great.
That's it.
Yeah, I like that. That made sense to me. That really made sense. Yeah, it did. Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. That's how I feel. That's how I feel. That's sometimes how I feel. Yeah. Or
I can see a river still. Bobby.
I was just thinking about that because it's like really new people.
It's really what, sorry?
New people.
New people.
Yeah, people. And I would just say something that I take a pause.
Okay.
Because I think there's a lot of stuff that you could try to. I'm thinking about a lot of young people that I've been working with.
Mm.
You know, when's the last time you took a pause? That's what I would start with, because I think in getting them to start to take a pause, then you can sort of build on the other stuff. And I think that's also something that's good for myself as well, you know, to remember to take a pause.
Okay, remembering.
Mm.
The word remembering comes up, yeah. Remembering
to take a
take a pause, yeah. It is about remembering, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah. Thank you.
I'd like to say to someone about the beauty of it. How it's there, how it feels like it's there underneath when, if ever, you let go of that stuff that's in the way. And yeah, that connectedness and feeling life.
Connected, feeling your own life and other people's. And what did you say at the beginning? Something under the surface or underneath?
That it's there.
It's there.
It feels to me that it's there underneath the other subjects in life. And whenever you come back to it, it feels like it's a more natural way to be.
So the practice is the thing that's underneath.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So some other practice underneath the feelings.
It wasn't possible to hear that. I couldn't hear it.
Sorry.
Can I try and would you like to say it again to the group?
I was talking about how I'd like to say to someone that it's beautiful. And that to me it feels like it's there underneath its beauty, and that other stuff gets in the way, but if you can connect with that, it feels natural, and it feels about connecting to yourself and other people, and like life, feeling life.
Feeling life.
Aspiration rather than practice.
Okay.
practice, I suppose, makes perfect. I use the word all.
All.
And take those three letters, awareness, letting go, and love.
Right.
Those three, I think, are the basis of what I try and do. Try and do. Awareness of what's going on inside. And then letting go of all those things that, like chains, like tangles, like a rope, that drag me to let go. And then to talk about compassion, I think, starts with filling myself and my heart with love.
Thank you. That's really good, and then obviously the word all as well got an energy to it. Yeah, okay. Did you want to speak? I think I didn't know if you're putting your hand up or scratching your head, so.
I'm scratching, but I can talk.
Yeah, okay.
I think what you were saying about, or thinking about something similar about the practice, to not be really looking for something, but just to be and doing what is already there. Because we all have the Buddha nature. But the beauty is already there, it's just that. But I believe in like teaching beginners, especially the walking meditation, the drishti, the gazing, is really important.
The what, sorry?
The gazing.
The gazing,
yeah.
Okay. Where you look.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now they are being, I think you mentioned this morning, how we are still connected with the external world and how we can just stop in the gazing and the eyes, in a way of being allowing yourself not to be looking for something. Mm. Just realizing that it's already there.
Okay. So you said the word undoing, didn't you?
Yeah.
Undoing.
Yeah, like practice is not about doing something, just undoing what is in the way.
Okay.
And I'll allow you to see what is there.
So kind of a discovery, a revealing,
yeah.
Or a discovery of what's there. Mm-hmm. Ah. Nice.
For me, there's also something about accepting all the experience, not just the nice ones.
Mm.
So that it's kind of accepting without wallowing.
Okay, accepting without wallowing.
Yeah.
Right.
So that you can have somewhere like this that was offered, used to incarcerate people.
Yeah.
Which temporarily. And it becomes beautiful. You can have drains in the courtyard, and they're still drains and they have a use, but you also can make them into a feature.
Mm.
So it's somehow, I know that's all external stuff, but it kind of reflects inside that even what seems to be difficult or challenging can have a role.
Okay. I can try. Can I try? Yeah. Thank you very much. What's your name?
Caroline.
Caroline. So Caroline was talking about accepting without wallowing. Accepting the nice and the not so nice. These are my words. Jump in if you want to, but. And using the metaphor of this place having been a courthouse and a place where people get locked up, now becoming something beautiful, and the drains being made into a feature. So, something that seems not so nice has a use, has its place. So it's kind of an acceptance of all the things, even if they seem not so nice, they have their place. Is that fair enough, yeah? So we have kind of 5 or maybe 10 more minutes. If there's any, let me just think what. I mean, just listening to all of you, it feels like to me that there's a lot of wisdom in the room. You know, describing what you're doing with your practice. Certainly, I'm feeling really happy to hear what you're talking about. It's like, oh wow, what we're doing here, you know, we really are practicing here. Didn't feel like, that sounds completely crazy to me, I'm not sure what that person's doing, I'm not sure what you're doing. Didn't have that experience. And that wouldn't necessarily mean that would just, I don't know what that would mean if I did have that experience. Somebody asked me the other day what I practice, and I was telling them about 2 different things which I use as touchstones in my practice, places where it's been easy to not get caught in doubt and uncertainty. First of all, I find myself being dumbstruck by the simple fact that there is anything at all that there's a universe, that there's conscious life, and that that's here. That's just something that seems to happen to me. At school, I was like, well, wait a minute, what am I actually? You know, my mind just can't make sense of that. It can't think its way through that. So that's been a real touchstone that I've kind of been able to find my way back to. Just looking at a picture of the earth and space, and it's like, ah, I don't know what this is. And my ideas about what this situation is and what's important subside, and I'm present with a real wanting to know what this is. I don't know. And I really want to know. So that's one sort of touchstone. And I don't get caught in doubt because I really know that I don't know. I don't lie. No doubt about that. I do not know. The other one is, I know that I want to flourish and be well, and I don't want to have a really difficult time. And I also just think that that's true about each of you. I really trust that. Yeah, I can't prove it really, but I just really trust it. No, I don't have doubts there. It's like, I know that. I can rely on that. So whatever technique, whatever school I go to, whatever tradition I'm in, it's like these two things just I've looked after, and they look after me, those two ways, those two touchstones. So even if practice falls apart, I can find those two places in a way. And I really trust that. And it doesn't sound like something I've read in the book. It's something that I found and had to start making sense of in my own life, my own experience. And it may not look like anybody else's practice, but for me, it's utterly real. So I think that's why I wanted to do this theme today, because, you know, it's really easy to think that it's never going to happen, progress isn't happen, doesn't happen, waking up is just a myth. It's really easy to get disheartened by that and get stuck in that. But I find myself often with students really encouraging people, yes, that's it, you can really trust your experience, you can trust that. And I really think that's true. I think that's a message that's important to hear for all of us. I mean, that's, yeah, it's come out of me being listening to people working with practice. Oh. I think we should. We have to be out by 5, don't we?
I think it's 5:30.
5:30? Okay. So, I was thinking we had to be out by 5, but we've got half an hour more. But I thought it'd be nice to have a time where we could break the silence, have tea, and be social if you want to be social. But seeing as we've got a bit more time, is there anything that anybody wants to say or ask or...
I'll just add to the theme you've been raising there. For me, my practice is seems to be more and more about allowing myself moments of being with simple and very uncomplicated direct experience, which of course doesn't have judgment because that would be simple. It did. And what I found is when I've ever been able to rest in that place, the kind of my sense of direction or the next decisions or whatever seem to be fine. I've come to trust that very deeply, sometimes through experience, really. And so it's not through, I think maybe there's thought somewhere, but it's not through a thinking process that I find it connect. It is a sense of coming home to somewhere that's quite trustable.
Mm. OK. coming home, allowing yourself to, you said something at the beginning that really stayed with me, allowing yourself to meet the direct experience simply, and coming home, and then also how moving on from that place. Do you say you knew what to do, or you just know what to do?
I don't look for an answer to a problem, but sometimes when I just go about sitting, I'm quite sure I know what to do. And it's always been okay. Actually, it's been something I really trust now, more and more.
That's lovely to hear.
So it's something about removing barriers.
Removing barriers.
Yeah, and coming back to the kind of original simplicity that we all have.
Okay. Original simplicity we all have.
Then the other cornerstone is kind of who am I, what is this all about?
What is this the all about? Could be there, but it wouldn't have to be there.
But is that so in you? Would you say that? Is that a desire? Where is that coming from?
I don't know. I just want to know. That's like.
Do you want to know the source of it? Or you just. Because you say, like. I know I don't know, and I want to know. I think those are the words.
Yeah, basically.
So, but how do you know you want to know?
Because I'm walking down the road, and then suddenly my stomach turns, my mind goes completely quiet, and I'm like, oh, I don't know what I am. I don't know why there's life. I'm just struck by the mystery of the fact that there's anything at all. And I can't not notice it because it feels really significant. And I'm like, oh, it's kind of seductive, to be honest.
Yeah.
It's seductive. It's like a little walking sleepily down the road and something pops out from behind a building.
So people's reasons for practice are different. Like we were describing what is practice, but asking that, why do we practice? Different.
What is the question? It's not really a question. I mean, I don't know. It's, you're asking me.
Well, yeah, I was just asking you. Like, I understand. I understand that everybody wants to be, happy and free from suffering. Everyone in the world would want that. It's human nature. But it's not human nature to want to know what we are.
Oh. No, I don't think. I mean, so I don't know if it is or
it
not.
It doesn't seem to be. I mean, I have it.
Mm.
Other people, some people here have different reasons why they practice, but it seems to be more an individual. I just don't understand where it is. I know it's strong for me, I know it's strong, that desire, but I don't know what I'm saying. I'm just confused as to what.
Okay.
It's strong, it's there, it's always been there. It calls me to come here and do all things, all these things, but it kind of seems. Like people have such
different
desires, basically.
Yeah.
And is it a desire or is it something else?
So it's kind of you're in the area of, what's really, what's motivating you, but is that going to be the same for everybody? Probably not. You don't think it is, or?
Yeah. So why is it? Why? What's it for?
What's what for?
It's motivation.
What's the motivation?
To practice.
Yeah. Oh, I'm confused now. I'm confused.
Well, I guess I hear my father going, what's the point?
Oh, okay.
Maybe that's it.
Right.
No, what's
there
the
we
point?
Are.
What's the point of doing all this? I mean, I know how satisfying it is and wonderful and beautiful, and something described, many people describe it quite well. So, all ways that resonated with me, it's just, it is an amazing thing to do. But to explain to somebody who doesn't know what it is, it's like somebody who doesn't see the point.
Well, rather than explaining it to somebody who doesn't see the point, try beginning by explaining it to someone who's interested. And then you might discover what you need to say to the one who's not interested.
Explain it to myself, for example.
Yeah.
I'm very interested.
Yeah. Someone who's interested. Yeah.
Related to that, Iyengar, who died a couple of years ago, he was asked, What was the point? What was the point of yoga? What was the point of the practice that he was doing? And he thought about it for a while and he said, to have a good death.
Okay. There we go.
I think we are all dying somehow, and as consciousness we don't conceive non-existence. And we don't conceive not having been here. And we don't conceive not being here in the future. I think that kind of fear blinds us when we are here on Earth. Very often we are not really present, we are not really enjoying or really connected, because we are somehow pushed by the urgency of knowing where I am, really. Because by trying to get the answer, trying to resolve the answer, maybe I will find out that I am something else, or practicing, meditating, just deep into my roots in a kind of special energy that helps me to feel that I am something else, a microcosm, not just around the person born around that time.
So death and being something more than just a random person in a random time. Would that be a bad thing, to be a random person in a random time?
No, but I think the fact of being self-awareness is a strange tool. I think self-awareness can make you feel that it's not possible, probably, that all these data just vanish. All these data happen. And experiences and feelings and love. Otherwise, why would we be self-aware? We wouldn't need to. I mean, we can just be animals and prowl free.
Be angel. The word death still stands out for me. The word death. You said the word death at the beginning. That to me is like, oh yeah, that's a real motivator, isn't it? We don't know.
I was somehow trying to respond that kind of why am I practicing it? Or why do I think I am practicing meditating? What's the goal? Just to feel connected now, here, to enjoy.
That's not a question, is it?
No.
No. Steve.
Just might answer your question in similar another thing that with Iyengar, one of the Iyengar students, there was somebody practicing and just said, what am I doing this for? You know, and he said, she said, what's the point? He said, you're the point.
I think I need to take that one with me.
Things like, for instance, making more grounded or more collected, I think that's easily understandable for people. But if you say that the curiosity that you mentioned, if somebody doesn't have the curiosity, I think it's impossible, because I tried to relate it and I just found it impossible. And then I question myself as well, and I'm thinking, I'm actually complicating my life unnecessarily. Wouldn't it be easier just, you know, not to think about those kind of things? But I can't help it, because I always have been.
Okay.
Just comes automatically.
I think learning to bring investigation and curiosity and inquiry is a real skill, and we need to learn to put it down as well. So the asking the questions, if we're just going up into the head and it's not grounded, then we kind of can get tired out, and then we don't get, it's not satisfying somehow. I think the curiosity, for me, I can also be like that, too philosophical, and it can get ungrounded. Something about being embodied, keeping it simple, and learning to say, okay, that's enough thinking about why there is anything at all for today, Paul. Put that down. James?
Yeah, I think for me, like you, for a long time it seemed kind of intuitively important to kind of contemplate that question, why is there anything? And it also seemed to me the point of that was not to find an answer, but just kind of sit with it. But for a long, long time I had this kind of intuitive sense it was important, so I didn't really understand how that could lead on to things like, well, does it let me let go of craving? Does it let me be kind to people? Does it let me be okay about change? But actually, with time, I've come to think it does. It can help with all those things. So I think it's not just, it can be, it can be something that really helps you to live your life rather than just going off into speculation.
Brilliant. Yeah. Thank you.
Because I think I've been hearing two kind of strands going on here. And one is, you know, what is your experience of meditation? And the other one is why do you meditate? You know, so they're a little bit different, and one is describing what the experience is. But if someone were to say to me directly, why do you meditate? I might just say, well, you know, because if I don't, I'm all over the place, and I'm not such a nice person. And my husband isn't particularly interested in this sort of thing either. But I think he's quite supportive
Great. That's good, isn't it? Yeah.
I'd also like to just say I was very drawn to hear what you had to say when you mentioned touchstones. And the way it affected me wasn't to think, oh, they must be mine, but to look for what mine might be.
Okay, nice.
So, thank you.
You're welcome. Okay.
I haven't got anything to offer this conversation because I am completely clear. So, when it really comes to the top of the wall, so just to kind of give some appreciation to hearing all these things. It has so far today been a really good experience.
Okay.
And I guess I've come up with, there's a difference between noticing and being distracted. That's something I'm taking away with today. That's sort of circling the background that you don't actually have to think about. And the other thing I sort of picked up was that I felt happier if I wasn't having to go back to the breath.
Okay.
it was almost like I think by going back to the breath, it was almost like I was thinking the breath,
okay,
and therefore changing the breath. Mm. So I felt, I don't know what that makes sense.
Breath is making it more agitated, then you don't need to use it. There might be a time when you're really in a your head's like a washing machine and the breath is really useful. It's not everybody's thing using the breath. Some people really like it, some people really struggle with it. It's a good one, but it's not compulsory. It's an available option. But it's a learning thing. If you want to do mindfulness of breathing, it's going to be difficult at times, and at other times it will be wonderful. But I also hear that it was helpful as a beginner to hear what everybody was talking about in practice. Yeah. Yeah. I never thought about that. That's, yeah. I think I'd quite like to have a cup of tea. should we move into tea? Talking? Before, I just want to say something about the Dana tradition, which is the tradition of financially supporting teachers, which we've inherited from the Buddha and his monks and nuns, who never had money. They were looked after by the lay people, would provide food and shelter and medicine and clothes, and the monks and the nuns would give teachings if they were asked to. And me and my colleagues and my teachers do this kind of work in the same way. We don't charge a fee, we don't ask for money, but we let it be known that there is an opportunity, should you wish, to make a financial contribution to my livelihood. I do other bits of part-time work. I've been a chef and a care worker and making healthy energy bars and a few other bits and pieces, which I stitch it together. And the donations that I receive from students is also a really important part of my income. So if you'd like to be generous and offer some money, then you're most welcome to.
And there's a box in the corner there.
Thank you. And there's a box. Is that that
colourful
the box there?
Box,
yeah.
Yeah.
So. Okay.
Can I just say?
Yeah, sure.
From my own point of view, you mentioned grateful. I'm grateful to you, Paul.
Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed.
Oh, you're most welcome. It's an honour to be here. Sitting up here. I've been to teachings where there's lamas, you know, these great teachers who sit behind a desk, and I'm sitting here, I'm like, oh, okay.
Thank you.
Anything else we need to say practically?
No.
Just that we need to be out by 5:30. Yeah, okay.